So what I'd like to do is to start the session by giving an update on HPV vaccine. And when we planned this session, we thought we actually there might be new recommendations, and that's why we titled this presentation "And Recommendations." However, instead of presenting the new recommendations, what I'm going to be doing is giving an update on upcoming issues for consideration regarding recommendations that advisory bodies will need to address. So I think, as everyone here knows, the first recommendations for HPV vaccine use were made in June 2006, and these are the recommendations. The ACIP recommended routine vaccination of females 11 to 12 years of age and catch-up vaccination for females 13 to 26 years of age. Now, there's a variety of upcoming issues for HPV vaccine recommendations that are going to need to be addressed, and they include the use of the bivalent HPV vaccine, HPV vaccines for use in females older than 26 years of age, and then HPV vaccine in males. And I will discuss some information related to each of these through my talk today. For the first part of my talk, I want to discuss the quadrivalent and the bivalent vaccine and just run over some data. Some of it's been published and some of it has just been presented. First of all, this table reviews the quadrivalent and the bivalent vaccine. I think, as most people know, the quadrivalent vaccine includes four types, 6, 11, which are the low-risk types causing genital warts, and 16 and 18, which are two types associated with cervical cancer. And the bivalent vaccine includes HPV 16 and 18. The quadrivalent vaccine is produced in a yeast substrate, which is used for a variety of vaccine productions, and the bivalent vaccine is produced in a baculovirus expression system. Both vaccines are given intramuscularly in a three-dose schedule, and the timing of the second dose varies slightly between the two vaccines. The adjuvant for these vaccines also differs. The quadrivalent vaccine has an adjuvant containing aluminum hydroxyphosphate sulfate, which is an adjuvant used in other vaccines licensed in the U.S., and the bivalent contains a new adjuvant, ASO4, which is currently not in any vaccine licensed for use in the U.S. The quadrivalent vaccine was licensed in June 2006 and is now licensed in 80 to 100 countries around the world. And the bivalent vaccine, an application was submitted to FDA in March 2007, and this vaccine is under consideration. The bivalent vaccine is also licensed in multiple countries around the world. Now, this slide shows a variety of aspects of the clinical development programs for these vaccines. Both companies have large clinical development programs, and they were very similar. After preclinical and phase one studies, the phase two efficacy studies were conducted in females 16 to 23 years of age or 15 to 25 years of age, and these studies were powered to look at virologic endpoints. And following that, larger pivotal phase three efficacy trials were done in similar-aged women, and these trials were powered to look at histologic endpoints like CIN23. And adolescent immunogenicity and safety studies were conducted to bridge the antibody results from the efficacy trials in older females, and it's on the basis of these bridging studies that the companies have indications or hope to get indications for vaccine use down to 9 or 10 years of age. And then smaller immunogenicity and efficacy studies are being done in females greater than 25 years of age, and I'll present some of those data later. And I don't have on this slide, but Merck is also conducting trials in men. So just to review some of the data that's been published, there's a lot of data that's been published in the last 8 to 12 months. This slide shows data from the quadrivalent vaccine efficacy phase three trials looking at prevention of HPV 6, 11, and 16, 18 related outcomes. This main analysis was done in the per-protocol population, which includes women who did not have evidence of infection with a vaccine type at the time of vaccination and remained negative until they had received their third dose. The major endpoint was CIN23 or AIS, and you can see there was only one case. I guess it's not going to work. There was only one case in over 5,000 women who received the vaccine. The vaccine was 98% effective. In the quadrivalent vaccine trials, other endpoints were also evaluated, condyloma or genital warts, and VIN-VEIN, which are vaginal and vulvar cancer precursor lesions. And you can see in the per-protocol population, the vaccine was 100% effective for preventing these endpoints. Now, the overall efficacy was also evaluated for the quadrivalent vaccine, what was called the intent-to-treat population. This included all women in the trial, regardless of whether or not they had HPV detected at the time of enrollment. And because the vaccine does not have any therapeutic efficacy, that means it does not prevent progression to disease if you're already infected with an HPV vaccine type, the efficacy in this population is lower than in the HPV naive women. And as you can see, the efficacy here for CIN23 or AIS was 41%, 71% for VIN or VEIN, and 78% for vulvar and vaginal lesions, including genital warts. Of note, about a quarter of the women in these trials had HPV infection, vaccine-type HPV infection detected at the time of enrollment. This slide shows the data on the bivalent HPV vaccine efficacy from the phase 3 trial. This analysis was done in what's called the total vaccinated population. Again, women included in this analysis were naive to a vaccine type at the time of enrollment, but they included everyone in this analysis who included at least one dose of vaccine. They didn't wait till women had three doses. The vaccine efficacy here was also quite high, 90%, and there were only two cases in the vaccine group, more than almost 8,000 women. The bivalent vaccine trials have not published their intent to treat analysis, and so we don't have data on that particular outcome, but we do know from other published data that the bivalent vaccine also shows no therapeutic efficacy, so it's likely that the intent to treat analyses would be similar in these vaccine trials. Now, there's a variety of questions that have been raised about the vaccines, and I'm just going to have time to go over a few. Of course, one of the main ones is, what is the duration of protection? How long will the vaccines provide protection? And for any new vaccine, this is often brought up because of limited data available on duration because of few years of follow-up in the clinical trials. This slide shows the mean follow-up time in the clinical trials to date. And as you can see in the phase 3 trials, data have been presented or published looking at 4 years of follow-up, and for the bivalent vaccine phase 3 trial, which was started later, there's only about 15 months of follow-up. However, there are longer follow-up from the phase 2 trials, 5 years and about 6 years from the phase 2 trials, and all of these studies show good duration of protection, 90 to 100% efficacy found for all endpoints, and no evidence of waning protection or disease, even among individuals who have lost detectable antibody. Now, there's also data from a challenge study of the quadrivalent vaccine, which provides some information on duration of protection. This slide shows data from that challenge study, and the top line on the graph with the dark circles shows the HPV-16 geometric mean titer after vaccination, and the middle line on this graph, which is the dotted line, shows antibody titers after a natural infection. And there's two things you can see from this slide. One is that the titers after vaccination are considerably higher than after natural infection. And this is found for both the bivalent and the quadrivalent vaccine. And in this study, at 60 months, at the far right side of the slide, individuals were given a challenge dose, a fourth dose of vaccine. And what you can see is a very rapid increase in antibody titers suggestive of demonstrating an amnestic response and suggesting immune memory. So really good sign in terms of long duration of protection from this vaccine. The other question that's been raised, and there has been a variety of media around this, is around cross-protection, and that is, do the vaccines provide protection against related HPV types? And this graph is just demonstrates, I think, what a lot of people know. This shows the cumulative percent of HPV types in cervical cancers worldwide. And you can see at the top that about 53% are due to 16 and a total of 70% are due to 16 and 18. And then the other types, a variety of other types, are each responsible for an additional small percentage of cervical cancer, shown in the little red bar at the end of these bars. So if the vaccines could provide cross-protection against other types, additional cervical cancers could be prevented. This is the phylogenetic tree for HPV, and I just want to show this to as background for showing some of the data. There's over 100 types of HPV, and they're divided into different families. The A9 type and the A7 types are in the red circles. HPV-16 types are A9, and HPV-18 types are A7. And the investigations on cross-protection have looked at cross-protection against these specific types to see if, since 16 and 18 are in the vaccine, are there cross-protection against these types. So what have these studies found? For the bivalent vaccine, this was published in the Lancet article this year, they looked at cross-protection looking at six-month persistent infections as their outcome. And as of note, HPV-45, which is related to HPV-18, and HPV-31 and 52, which are related to HPV-16, they found some protection against those types. Significant protection was also found against a combination of 12 non-vaccine oncogenic types using a 12-month persistent infection endpoint. So some protection against other vaccine types was found for the bivalent vaccine. For the quadrivalent vaccine, the analysis was done somewhat differently. Here they grouped the types by their phylogenetic relationships, looking at the A9 and the A7 species. And the outcome that was examined here was CIN23 or AIS, so an endpoint which was closer to cervical cancer. And here they found for the A9 species a significant efficacy of 45%. Now it's important to realize that there's really limited understanding of the meaning of the cross-protection that's found in these studies. First of all, reductions in persistent infections may not imply true reductions in disease, and reductions in CIN23 and AIS are unclear because many people have multiple infections, and it may not be obvious which HPV type is actually responsible for the lesion that's observed. So I think there's a lot of work that still has to be done on understanding a lot of the cross-protection data. Now, those are not the only two questions. There's a lot of questions, and I wanted to give an overview of ongoing or planned studies because there's a lot of work going on for both the quadrivalent and the bivalent vaccine. This is just an overview. First of all, both manufacturers are planning follow-up studies of the phase 2 and phase 3 trials. There's immunogenicity and efficacy data in females older than 25, and I'm going to be presenting that in just a moment. Efficacy trials are ongoing in men for the quadrivalent vaccine, age 16 to 26. Studies are also ongoing to look at simultaneous administration of HPV vaccine with other adolescent vaccines. A head-to-head comparative immunogenicity study is being conducted by GSK. This will directly compare the immunogenicity and reactogenicity of the bivalent and the quadrivalent vaccine. Safety and immunogenicity of the vaccine in HIV-positive women, and in the case of the quadrivalent vaccine, men, is also being done for both vaccines. And then phase 4 studies looking at long-term follow-up. So really a lot of work is ongoing. Now I mentioned at the beginning of this talk that there's a variety of upcoming issues for HPV vaccine recommendations. And this slide shows when ACIP may be addressing these. The first issue that will come before ACIP will be quadrivalent vaccine in females 27 to 45 years of age. This will be sometime this year, either in June or October, depending on when FDA reviews the data. The bivalent vaccine is under consideration for licensure for use in females, and that will be considered sometime in late 2008 or 2009. And data on the quadrivalent vaccine males will be available next year. So there's a lot of things that will be coming up actually very quickly for consideration. And the ACIP work groups are going to be kept very busy by the large amount of data coming in from all these trials. These are the data for the quadrivalent HPV vaccine in women 24 to 45 years of age. And these data were just presented at the February ACIP meeting and have been submitted to FDA. The endpoint here was HPV-6/11 and 16-18 related persistent infection, any kind of CIN lesion or external genital warts. As you can see, the efficacy was 91% overall. They broke this down into the 16-18 related endpoints and the 6-11 related endpoints, and the efficacy was 83% for the 16-18 related endpoints and 100% for the 6-11 related endpoints. And again, this analysis was done in women who were negative to the respective type at the time of enrollment. Now, what about the quadrivalent vaccine in women 27 to 45 years of age? If it's FDA approved, what recommendations should be made for vaccine use in this age group? And this is something that the committees will be struggling with. We've seen that there does seem to be efficacy in women who are naive to the respective vaccine type. We also know with increasing age, the rate of new HPV infections decreases and the likelihood of prior infection increases. And the cost effectiveness of vaccination will decrease with increasing age. So a variety of issues will be need to taken into account when advisory committees look at these data and make recommendations for this age group. Now, in terms of the bivalent vaccine, I just reviewed a lot of data on that. If it is FDA approved, there will be two HPV vaccines in the market. And this will raise some new issues for the vaccine world, because while these vaccines are both protect against 16 and 18, one protects against 6 and 11. So they're not exactly identical vaccines, and there'll be new considerations, I think, that advisory groups have not had to consider before. How should recommendations be stated for these two vaccines? And another question that will come up is, can the vaccines be used interchangeably in the vaccine series for protection against 16 and 18? I wanted to show this brief comparison table of the quadrivalent and the bivalent vaccine, kind of showing our thinking about how to think about the data we currently have in comparing these two vaccines. So in terms of protection against 16 and 18 related cervical intraepithelial neoplasia and adenocarcinoma in situ, the data show that the efficacy seems very high for both vaccines. And so right now I think data shows they'll be equivalent to protecting against that outcome. For protection against 6 and 11 related genital lesions, of course, the quadrivalent vaccine will provide protection, but the bivalent vaccine will not. For cross-protection against high-risk types other than 16 and 18, and as I showed, the analyses have been done somewhat differently. We don't know for sure, but I think the data will indicate that both vaccines have some protection. It may be minimal, but it may end up being kind of a wash, and they'll both protect against non-vaccine types. The duration for protection right now looks excellent for both vaccines, and only further follow-up will be able to indicate whether or not there are any differences between them. In terms of safety and adverse events, again, they appear similar, but we're, of course, waiting for the FDA review and additional analysis of ongoing data. The cost of the vaccine series is about $360 for the quadrivalent vaccine. Of course, we don't know yet what it will be for the bivalent vaccine. And finally, the next issue that advisory groups will need to consider would be quadrivalent HPV vaccine for men. There are no efficacy data available at this present time, but studies are ongoing with the quadrivalent vaccine. And considerations for these recommendations will include the impact on reduction of disease in women. That is, would vaccinating men actually decrease in cervical cancer in women? Will there be any direct benefit to men? And then the cost effectiveness. So a lot of issues will come up around the discussions around vaccine for men. So just in summary then, data on HPV vaccines continue to show high efficacy and good duration of protection. There'll be a lot of new data on HPV vaccines that will be available over the next months and years. And the most immediate upcoming HPV vaccine recommendations to consider are the quadrivalent vaccine for use in women over 26 years, the bivalent vaccine for use in women, and the quadrivalent vaccine for use in men. Thank you.